This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 75,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/sword.
This podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.
Laser Podcast, episode number 52. I'm Veronica Belmont.
And I'm Tom Merritt, now with most of my voice.
Yay! Actually, you do sound much better.
Thank you. I feel much better.
I lost my voice last night at a rock concert.
Oh, were you singing?
I was. And dancing.
Were you performing?
No. No, I was just singing in the crowd.
I see. Who was the band?
The Get Up Kids.
I don't know the Get Up Kids.
They were a band that I really, really liked when I was like 15, and they're still around and they're still really good, but I didn't feel old until I realized that I didn't know any of their songs from the last decade.
Yes, I know that feeling.
And I was that old person that was dancing to all the songs released in like 1994.
They're from Kansas City, Missouri.
Yeah.
Look at that.
They're fun. All right. That has nothing to do with swords or lasers.
Or lasers, no.
My voice is a little hoarse today for that reason.
You sound perfectly fine to me.
Oh, good. It's the wine.
It must be the wine. It's loosening up the vocal cords. Actually, alcohol is supposed to be really bad for your voice. But
I know. I have to do a lot of voiceover later tonight, too, so that's not going to be good.
Well, then let's just take care of that with some quick burns.
All right. What do we have up first tonight?
Well, mostly we got book releases to talk about, a few new ones since last week to add to the list, and we'll refresh you on some old ones. But before we get to that, Cory Doctorow had a great post up on Boing Boing this week about SF Signal, a website for the science fiction publishing industry, mm-hmm. who have asked a number of writers, editors, critics, and publishers this question: what will the publishing industry look like after 10 more years of advancing technologies? Ooh. And it's great to get a really good mix of different perspectives on where publishing is going, you know, the business realities of living in the digital age and the economics of print versus electronic publishing. If you're interested in that, I highly recommend it. Cory highlighted one particular response from writer Tim Pratt, who thinks authors are going to experiment a lot more with self-publishing as the barrier for entry to doing that lowers.
Well, there isn't even a barrier to that now. I mean, anyone can self-publish.
Exactly. It used to be, even to self-publish, you had to, you know, call a publisher and send galleys and go through all of the steps that you would have to do with a regular publisher. You just were guaranteed to get published was the only difference. Now you upload a document.
And yeah, so let me ask you,
formatting it.
As a self-published author, just how easy was the whole process?
It was the hardest part is formatting your document. Well, actually, the hardest part is writing your book. But the hardest part of the actual publishing is formatting your document to make sure that you've got it the way you want it to look when it's printed, because it looks different on a screen than it's going to look on pages. So make sure you got your margins set right and all of that. I have a few copies of Boiling Point that are not set properly. And so, you know, I ran through about $10 worth of book before, you know, because I uploaded it, had it printed out, sent to me, so that I could proof it. And I'm like, oh, that margin's a little off. So that part was difficult, but not horribly difficult. And then other than that, it's just upload, you know, put in your settings and publish away. Amazon makes it even easier now with their built-in book that automatically gives it an ISBN and lists it on Amazon.com.
And then makes it available on Kindle.
Yeah.
Automatically, which is great.
He thinks that a lot of purveyors of online books are going to take on the role of publishers curating ebook collections by, you know, the kind of the way iTunes App Store does for apps, mm-hmm. where anybody can publish an app, but they sort of promote certain ones and highlight different ones and show what's popular. He kind of thinks that's going to happen with books.
Yeah, I mean, there's really no barrier to doing that. So that's one great way. But it is actually figuring out how to make money and self-promote that's really the thing that is going to make people money at the end of the day. Because right. self-publishing doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get the promotion necessary to recoup the money that you've put into the project.
I have made tens of dollars.
Literally tens of dollars rolling in $10 bills.
I will go public with my finances. I made $10 last month on Boiling Point.
Well, I mean, but the book came out a while ago. How'd you do the first month it was out?
I don't know, like $20, $26. You know, the thing is, I'm not out there really pounding the pavement promoting it. I talk mm-hmm. about it on podcasts, and I get a little spike in sales sometimes, but it's not something that I've devoted myself to pushing, in which case I probably could do a little better. And Pratt says it's going to get harder for writers to make a living doing nothing but writing fiction. But he's like, most writers I know don't make a living exclusively writing fiction anyway. They're going to have to explore new methods like direct appeals, weird limited editions with interesting extras, stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of good stuff coming out soon on our calendar, the IO9 calendar of the ultimate guide to everything awesome in January. We're coming up on February, though, at this point. So
yeah,
we've covered some of this stuff.
They'll probably come out tomorrow with their ultimate awesome guide to everything in February. Mm-hmm. But we also, thanks to the Wort Zone blogs, they have a list for the entire year. We're able to pull some stuff together here. The Alchemist by Paolo Bacigalupi, we mentioned, out today as we're recording this, January 31st. So that should be on the bookshelves by the time you hear this. License to Ensorcel by Catherine Kerr. Mm-hmm. The psychic agent, serial killer, werewolf story. If that doesn't intrigue you, I don't know what else.
Yeah, I added that to my to-read list. And yeah. then we have The Son of Heaven by David Wingrove, which is one we haven't discussed before. It's coming out on February 1st, a special edition, and then March 3rd, the standard edition. And it's a former city broker ekes out a rural existence in a post-economic collapse. Post-economic collapse, Devon? Is that a place?
Yeah, Devon being an area in the England.
Okay. Before encountering an expanding Chinese techno-empire, the first in the 20-volume re-release of Wingrove's Cheng Kuo series.
So this is a really interesting take on the future world as dominated by China. And I think we may have mentioned this before on Sword and Laser, but if you're looking for an opportunity or an excuse or a reminder about Son of Heaven, there you go. February 4th, The Sea Watch by Adrian Tchaikovsky. It is coming to the UK. It's the sixth volume of Tchaikovsky's Shadows of the Apt series. Once again, seeing the Collegium under threat from outside forces. But this time, the wasps are not the enemy. Major betrayals and shocks are promised, says the Wort Zone. So check it out soon.
Yep. And then we mentioned Deep State by Walter John Williams on Kindle. The sequel to This Is Not a Game, about where alternate reality games and real life cross and meet, which I think would be a really cool one to read. That's February 7th. And then on the 21st of February, The Crippled Gods by Steven Erikson. That's coming out on tour on March 1st in the U.S. The Malazan Book of the Fallen reaches its conclusion. Well, more or less, six more books in two trilogies are on their way in its 10th volume. The Bone Hunters confront the Forkrell Assail in distant Kolan. Man, these fantasy names, they really get me sometimes.
And distant Kolans,
with the fate of the crippled god and the world itself are at stake. Expect a derisive ending of lost proportions.
If we're going to talk about the crippled gods on March 1st, we got to talk about the book that I am most excited about coming out on St. David's Day, March 1st. The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss comes to the UK and the United States both. It is the second day of the series after Name of the Wind, picking up some mixed advanced reviews. Great writing, glacial pace, but yeah, this is going to be a big success, and I'm definitely going to pick it up. I'm anxiously awaiting whether it's going to be on audiobook at launch. I think it is from the Amazon listing. The Amazon listing lists audio CDs, and usually if they've got the CD already ready to put out, the Audible will be on it and have it available digitally as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to reading that for the very first time. Yes.
What do you mean?
What? No, I don't know. What? Yeah. I'm excited to read it on March 1st for the first time.
Well, that's, yeah, of course.
Yeah, I mean, as everyone else is.
Why,
I'm sure.
Why did you make a big deal of pointing that out?
What? No, I didn't do that.
Hey, you know, this podcast is brought to you by Audible, and they will have the new Patrick Rothfuss, The Wise Man's Fear, so you could listen to it for the first time.
For the very first time when it comes out on March 1st.
The internet's leading provider of audiobooks has more than 85,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. And if you've been putting off trying out Audible, you need to help us.
No, I've been spreading the word.
You need to try it.
Audiblepodcast.com/sword is the website to point yourself and all your friends and family to listen to some audiobooks. They have an amazing selection, not only just in sci-fi fantasy, but in science and technology, fiction, nonfiction, you know, and history, everything.
You get to try one for free. Mm-hmm. So you do two things. Well, actually, you do three things. You try Audible out for no cost. You get a free book out of it. So even, you know, trying audiobooks I consider separate from free book. And you give them a vote of confidence for Sword and Laser to say, that Sword and Laser, they're worth sponsoring.
Yeah.
Their people went and tried stuff out. So it's really no risk to you. All benefit.
Yeah.
Because it helps us continue to bring you this show.
It's all benefit to everyone, really, at the end of the day.
Exactly.
There's so much good stuff on there, and I've fallen in love with so many of the narrators. It's just like a really great place to pick up books and to read new stuff when you don't have time to typically read. So highly recommend it. Audible.com, audiblepodcast.com/sword. Check it out.
In fact, I'm going to say try out Name of the Wind by Patrick Rothfuss on Audible if you haven't read it, to prepare you for the release of Wise Man's Fear.
For your very first reading of The Wise Man's Fear by Patrick Rothfuss, coming out March 1st.
Which you totally haven't read yet.
Nope.
There you go. Audiblepodcast.com/sword. Speaking of swords, time to bury your sword.
All right, so we talked a little bit about this last week, and I don't know if this thread already existed at that point or if it came afterwards, but there's a post by Jeremiah in the forums, and he said it came up on the recent podcast. There you go. How much was Pratchett and how much was Gaiman? Neil Gaiman posted his remembrance of Terry Pratchett a while back. Wait, Terry Pratchett's not dead.
In memory of Terry Pratchett,
who gave his life
for fantasy.
Yes, Neil goes on to say, you know, in a nice blog post, how he feels about Terry Pratchett and working with him. And Jeremiah included the relevant excerpt. A few years after we met in 1988, Terry and I wrote a book together. It began as a parody of Richmond Compton's Williams book, which we called William the Antichrist, but rapidly outgrew the conceit and became about a number of other things instead, and we called it Good Omens. It was a funny novel about the end of the world and how we're all going to die. Working with Terry, I felt like a journeyman working alongside a master craftsman in some medieval guild. He constructs novels like a guildmaster might build a cathedral ark. There is art, of course, but that's the result of building it well. What there is more of is the pleasure taken in constructing something that does what it's meant to do. Make people read the story and laugh and possibly even think. Yeah, Jeremiah goes on to talk about the whole situation and also, he notes that his family actually knows Terry Pratchett. Might be a little biased
here.
Well,
okay, fine. Go ask him. No, I'm just jealous. I think that the upshot of all the things I've read, and I was very happy to see this post from Jeremiah, but I've also read some other things here and there on other blogs about the collaboration, and I think the upshot is you get something different. You get alchemy. Mm-hmm. You get something that you can – it's sort of like – when you look at a child and they're like, oh, he's got your eyes, but he's got his ears. And then it turns out really it's a whole new person.
Yeah.
There may be things that are reminiscent of the parents, but it's a whole new creation. Mm-hmm. And I think a story is the same way. It's like you can see things that are reminiscent of Gaiman. You can see things that are reminiscent of Pratchett, but the combination is something greater than its parts.
Yeah. So what Jeremiah is basically doing here is pulling out the relevant bits of information from their various blog posts and writings about who did what, why they did it that way, and how it all came together at the end.
Also, William in this thread says, am I the only one who looks at the author's photo and immediately thinks, that's Crowley on the left and Aziraphale on the right? there was a response from Colin who says, if we're thinking of the same picture, Terry Pratchett on the left and Neil on the right, I'd suggest the reverse because I can't see Aziraphale in a black leather jacket.
No, that's not really his style.
But I think Pratchett would be Aziraphale and Gaiman would be Crowley.
Gaiman definitely looks like Crowley.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. And also, the 2010 Philip K. Dick Award nominees have been announced.
Woohoo! Thanks to Tom, but not me.
Different Tom. Yeah, he actually included all of them in their little Goodreads icon form, which is really nice to see. So we've got Yarn by John Armstrong, Chill by Elizabeth Baer, The Reapers Are the Angels by Alden Bell, Song of Scarabius by Sarah Creasy, The Strange Affair of Spring-Heeled Jack. Oh, excellent ska band, by the way, from the tri-state area.
Nice.
By Mark Hodder. Harmony by Project Ito, translated by Alexander O. Smith. And State of Decay by James Knapp.
Sean says that he has read Harmony and he can't imagine any of the others being more deserving. He says Harmony has questions about the nature of consciousness and free will, the difference between utopia and dystopia, and what would happen if people could hack your mind, not to mention one of the most mind-blowing endings he's ever read. That sounds intriguing. I may have to add that to my list.
Yeah, definitely. And he made it so easy by just having the icons right there.
I know. That's great. Thank you so much for doing that, Tom.
Well, should we check in on the book?
Sure. So you're all done, right? I mean, you were really close last week when we talked, and I was already done. So you're all.
I wouldn't say I was close last time, and then
wrap up.
I went on a trip, and I was going to bring the book, and then I forgot the book, and so I'm not quite done yet. I'm not done.
You're not done.
I'm not done.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So we'll be wrapping up Good Omens next time.
Next time? Yeah, there's always a next time. I mean, you guys aren't done.
About it so much at this point. I can't ask you the final questions until you finish.
Are you trying to make me feel guilty now?
No, I'm just trying to explain to the audience why they're not getting the wrap up.
I hate myself.
Veronica.
Now I feel bad about myself.
No, you're gonna drive me to drink. We forgive you. Please, everyone, go to Goodreads. Start a thread. We forgive you, Veronica.
That's not going to happen. They haven't forgiven me.
Because you know what? There's people in the audience who haven't finished it yet either.
There are expectations, Tom. And I have not met them.
Promises were made. There were expectations. He was into field hockey players.
Audiobook listening of the Tiffany Aching series is going very well.
That's good.
We are not reading that, but my
audiobook listening of The Dark Tower, I am on to Wizard and Glass, book four, and enjoying it very much.
Well, should we talk about maybe what we want to read next? I know we're not quite there yet because we haven't technically done the wrap-up episode yet, but I thought it'd be fun to give people, get a barometer of how people are feeling.
So next episode, so you don't feel like we're dragging our heels, we'll wrap up Good Omens. Because Veronica will be done by next episode.
I promise you.
I'm not worried about that. And then we'll kick off our next book so you can get started right away. Now, just to telegraph it, I'm going to throw out there the idea that we're not picking it yet. This is almost like, sometimes we do a poll and we put up four books. This is almost like when you vote for judges and you just vote yes or no whether to retain them or not. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna throw this out. Vote yes or no. Tell us what you think on the Goodreads forum. Should we read at long last Shadow and Claw, the first half of the Book of the New Sun by Gene Wolfe?
Now this is a book that you truly consider to be one of the best combinations of both sword and laser that you can think of.
Yes. I can't remember if in Shadow and Claw it gets there, but if you go on to the second half of the Book of the New Sun, you get swords and actual lasers. Mm-hmm. So this is Let me just read you the editorial summary here, okay?
Okay.
The first person narrative of Severian, a lowly apprentice torturer, blessed and cursed with a photographic memory, whose travels lead him through the marvels of future URTH, Earth, and who, as revealed near the beginning, eventually becomes his land's sole autarch. On the surface, it's a colorful story with all the classic ingredients: growing up, adventure, sex, betrayal, murder, exile, battle, monsters, and mysteries to be solved. For lovers of literary illusions, there are plenty here. A Dickensian cemetery scene, a torture engine from Kafka, a wonderful library out of Borges, and familiar fables changed by eons of retelling. Wolf evokes a chilly sense of time's vastness with an age-old, much-restored painting of a golden-visored knight, really an astronaut, standing on the moon, and an ancient citadel of metal towers, actually grounded spacecraft. Even the sun is senile and dying.
Mm, okay, well, I have one point to make about this whole thing.
Okay.
It is not available on Kindle. I don't know if that's going to change people's opinions
okay.
or not. You know,
right.
it's just something that's good to know. It is not available on Kindle, so you should know that. Our last book was also not available on Kindle. So if that's something that really bothers you, just good to know.
Yeah, but this is a book that is worth reading and picking up from your library, mm-hmm. finding a used copy of it if you can. And you can get audiobooks of them.
You can. Okay. That's good.
You can get The Shadow of the Torturer, Book of the New Sun, Book 1, and The Claw of the Conciliator, Book of the New Sun, Book 2. They have them in separated. And essentially, when you buy it in a book, you get The Shadow and The Claw together. Mm-hmm. So you get them as two separate audiobooks.
Okay. All right. Audiobooks are good. I'm into that. Oh, I had to make one point that I forgot to make earlier. Actually, maybe we can save it. We'll save it for the email section. But are we at the email section now?
Well, we were just going to mention real quick before we get to the emails that we're going to be at Dragon Con again this September.
We are. We have our hotel rooms and everything.
Yep, we're all set. We're talking to the Dragon Con folks about doing another third year of Sword and Laser at Dragon Con. But we want your idea of who we should try to get to have on the show. We've had great luck having great authors the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. And so we're looking for a little feedback. We'll put a link in the show notes to the Dragon Con guest list. So you can look and see what kind of people are already going to be showing up. But of course, that's not complete yet. Other people will be coming. And just because they're there, it doesn't mean that they'll be available for us. But, you know, who should we have on the show?
I just have to start out by saying that there are some major authors that I would love to talk to. Of course, we've had Timothy Zahn on the show before, and he was great, but it would be fun to have someone new. Anne McCaffrey, the author of Dragon Riders of Pern and the Pern series, is going to be there, which is amazing. Terry Brooks, Sword of Shannara, is going to be there, and Todd McCaffrey, Anne McCaffrey's son, will be there as well, and Charlene Harris.
That would be fun.
How many of you out there are True Blood fans? But the author of that book series is going to be there as well. So there's a lot of good people already, and the list is still very small.
So anyway, check that out. It'll be there'll be a link at swordandlaser.com, and I'll just post on Goodreads what you think. Let's get to the emails.
Okay, well, before we get to the emails we had selected, I wanted to mention I got an email from Eric Weiss, and he included a picture of Joe Abercrombie's The Heroes already on an end cap. And he said, did you know it's on sale now? Pick from Barnes & Noble here in the D.C. area. Not 2-7, as Amazon is saying. So I'm looking at a picture of the book at Barnes & Noble in D.C. right now. So just saying, it looks
that
to
sucks.
Be already example already to be on
what
sale.
What are they, some kind of crazy test market?
Maybe. Or maybe they put the books out too early.
Maybe they did. You know, that happens with gadgets a lot.
Yeah.
People accidentally put out displays and stuff.
So, just so you know, if you're in the D.C. area, The Heroes, on sale now.
Go check it out. On to Ken, who says, hi, Tom and Veronica. Love the show, especially for introducing me to Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. I think if C.S. Lewis and Douglas Adams wrote a book together, it would be similar to this book. That's about as high a praise as I can give. I've gotten another Pratchett, Unseen Academicals, to immediately plow through. I only hope Pratchett and Gaiman individually are half as good as Gaitchett. Or should that be Prattman? My vote is for Prattman. Thanks again, Ken.
Prattman, I like it.
Yeah,
and
I
then
like
we got an email from Brandon. He said, "Hey guys, I love your show and listen to it in a massive chunks when I need to get through a long design project. I just listened to the podcast where Veronica says several times it seems that Anne Rice is no longer born again and has renounced the whole lifestyle. I wanted to comment, well, actually, that she is still a believer in the divinity of the man known as Jesus. She simply made a statement divorcing herself from American right-wing politics. Outside of the political arena, she remains the same lady with the same beliefs. I only write it because it could be interpreted from the comments on the show that she changed her beliefs and that this could influence the book. While that is still possible, it's less likely when her comments are taken in context. Thanks for doing the show. You guys not only fill a need, but do it in top quality." Okay, very good point. That is true. I'm sorry if it came off that way, I'm glad that we had the clarification.
Yeah, thanks, Brandon. Appreciate that. It's good to keep us honest. John writes in, "Every time I listen to your podcast, I think to myself, I wonder why they chose Barrier Sword as the title of the feedback section. It wasn't until I read the show notes for the latest podcast this morning and about 3 seconds of dissonance that I realized my mistake. It's Bear Your Sword. Oops. Good choice on the real title. Much better than the one I made up in my head."
Barrier Sword
just
is a very
for John's
good
sake,
weapon.
I made sure to really slur Barrier Sword today when we talked about it.
Barrier Sword.
I'm going to rename it Barrier Sword just to mess with you. No.
There you go. I do that all the time, though. I mishear things regularly, so I totally understand where you're coming from. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. Then you're like, oh.
Is it like Barrier Reef but made of swords? I don't get it.
Like I said, it's a good defensive weapon, the Barrier Sword.
Yes, exactly. It's also known as a shield.
Yes. Oh, good point. All right. Well, thank you to our partner StickerFoo. Use the code SWORD1 and get 10% off the stickers at www.stickerfoo.com. If you want to get in touch with us, the email address, as always, is theswordandlaser@gmail.com. The website is just swordandlaser.com. And, of course, all our discussions happen over at Goodreads at goodreads.com. Look for The Sword and Laser or get to it from the discussions pane and the website.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.